University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BridgeNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BridgeNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BridgeNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year, and is available at BridgeNet.com/APR. The BridgeNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BridgeNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BridgeNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
The snowman is shaping up to be an 8, but not out of 10. The robots awake to find that they've been taped down, wondering when they'll break through these chains. But little boys have action toys for brains.
Killers, and I, you may not remember that from last year. Great Big Sled, really good. Not a pure Christmas song, but it's got its winter, its winter-esque tone and Christmassy. There's enough Christmas in it to make it qualify. The Killers, who are great. Nick Tamaro joins us, and Nick, happy holidays again.
Same to you, Steve. How are you?
Very good. Very good. And we're not going to be on next Friday. Determination was made this week. And so I think this might be the last NTAM 1215 visit. So we will wish you a happy birthday tomorrow, right now, instead of after the fact.
Much appreciated. Unfortunately, you reach a certain age and it just becomes another day, but as much as I attach my birthday to my Twitter handle and emails and things like that, it's I guess a day worth noting. So we'll have to at least acknowledge it. I'm going to do what I'm supposed to do and go with my father to Sam Houston, take in the simulcast, because that's what we've always done. So we're not going to change that for anything.
And I did see the press release about the Sam Houston season, and not far off. So you'll get some live racing. You get over there a few times during the meet, no?
Oh yeah, definitely. No, we'll go. I'm going to actually go to the Pegasus and then fly home Sunday morning so that I can go to the Houston Ladies Classic, which is the next day. Should be a really good card. Hopefully, there are some horses running in the Rampart this weekend that we might see there, and also the Cumley from a few weeks ago. I would imagine Brad Cox will support the race as he's kind of gotten dabbled a little bit in races in Houston over the last couple of years, and that's a good-sized purse. Obviously, the John B. Connolly is run on the same day at a mile and a half on the turf, so all of the turf-inclined trainers certainly have an opportunity.
Well, the stakes schedule kind of getting started in earnest at Gulfstream. I brought up Tampa a little bit with James Scully before. Of course, New York kind of treading water a little bit. We've got a couple of New York Stallion Series races tomorrow and Sunday. And actually, the race on Sunday drew a big, bulky field, actually, the Great White Way. And there's also a, I thought, a decent maiden race tomorrow I haven't brought up yet at Aqueduct, including Kieran sending out the brother of Takaful.
Yeah, it's I mean, we always talk around this time of year about how, I mean, especially with the purse structure, there's a lot of good opportunities for maidens, and that does look like a good maiden special weight race. There's good field sizes tomorrow and Sunday as well. Obviously, going to a little bit of a pared-down schedule is helping. There really wasn't a whole ton of field size yesterday, but today and tomorrow are much better cards, and that's Heichel that you're referring to tomorrow, who debuted and missed by a neck at 14-1 in a race where the pace was exceptionally fast. Family Biz held on by a neck, and so we've always seen through time that Kieran's horses get better with experience. That seems like a decent opportunity to maybe hone in on him a bit in terms of multi-race bets. The stake race tomorrow comes outside of the late pick five and the pick six and the pick four because it looks like Sassy Agnes will be a pretty big favorite. But, you know, this is a bit more interesting race than that. Now, it needs to be said that Linda Rice's barn has been very, very strong lately, so it's not going to be any surprise if Sassy Agnes just proves to be much too good for these horses. She set a really strong pace in the key sense and went on with it last time. But looks like she's going to get challenges right from the start with the Forgotten Hero immediately to her outside. And I think you could see a little bit of speed from Cartwheel and Lulu. Party Like Grandma's probably not fast enough from the inside. And I'm wondering if that might set the table for She's So Shady, who broke her maiden on the flop on debut and then had some issues at the gate in her second start, which was obviously going to be a pretty difficult objective going to that key sense where she was 11-1. I think you're probably going to be best served by giving her another shot. Obviously, these Jason Service horses have to be taken very, very seriously in almost any scenario. And when you're going to get one at a decent price, you pretty much are obligated to try. So that's a horse that I'll be sure to include in the early pick five. And I'm not going to be surprised to by any means if she runs a vastly improved race, mainly because it feels like the race flow should really be in her favor.
Anything else in the sequence that... Nice field of 11 in that second level allowance. State Breds going 6. That's the 7th race. The Open Company allowance going 6.5. Anything else catch your eye?
Yeah, you know, it took a Lord quite some time to break his maiden for Chad Brown. This is a horse that everybody was kind of touted on going into Saratoga 2017, and it did take him quite some time to get his act together. He overcame a bit of a sluggish pace last time to get the job done. Feels like a horse that really is going to be at his best maybe a little bit longer, and that might be enough for you to try a couple of other options. Charitalto won a very salty New York bred race last time, sat just off a moderate pace. We expected the pace to be very, very strong. There have been two runback winners out of there. Now, worth mentioning that both of them came against significantly weaker fields. That included Bavaro, who ran very, very well last Saturday, dropping in class, and also Stony Bennett, who won an off-the-turf race just a couple of days later, actually on Saturday of that weekend after running on the day before Thanksgiving. But Charitalto And Jimmy Bond, you'll hear Andy talk about this a lot on Talking Horses and on the broadcast, that Jimmy Bond's horses have done very well over the winter. They stay in the care of his son, Kevin, and they've generally overperformed. So this is a horse that loves Aqueduct. I think if you can get somewhere around that 4-1, you're probably best off planning on him running as well as he did last time. And if he does, it's certainly going to be good enough to handle open company.
Anything else, Aqueduct, before we go to Florida?
That was about all I could see. Obviously, it's the winter, you know, and we have this conversation every winter, and I try and caution people to be conservative betting these races because you're going to run the risk of losing money by trying to create something that may not be there. So be cautious about it and be as prudent as possible. I know that I generally try to kind of slow down in terms of what I might do spending-wise on a pick five or any kind of multi-race sequence, because there are too many races where logical prices end up winning, and that includes, of course, favorites and horses that are maybe shorter prices than you would normally want to take, and you'll find yourself sort of spreading your way into oblivion. You also have scenarios like yesterday where the public is just very, very sharp with regards to certain horses, and that entry from Mertkan Kentermachi that went off the 3-5 in the fifth race, the payoff leg of the early pick five, that didn't really look 3-5 on paper, but they looked about 1-10 at the quarter pole and got it done very, very easily. So it's a good time of year to play and to handicap, and it's all dirt, obviously, so you've got good opportunities, but you just want to be careful in terms of how you manage your bankroll.
You know, speaking of some prices and results, that nightcap yesterday, I was watching late. Carlisle Bell ran in the feature and ran well. Has been dropping out.
Ran well, absolutely.
Well, she getting back to a mile is a big part of it. But Eric Hansel told Gary to maybe close the cup on this. She's wearing pretty much open blinkers like cheaters, and he said maybe close up the blinker on her a little bit, and maybe that'll get her a little bit more involved early. But she came with a run, and she ended up pairing up her career top. But we've been waiting and waiting and waiting to run back in a mile with her. I mean, that's really what she wants. The six and seven and so forth are too sharp. I tell you, she was the best looking horse in the paddock. I'll tell you that. I mean, she looked fabulous. So she continues to grow, and I think she's going to be good as a 5-year-old. So I think we'll have some fun with her over the winter. But I was watching, and so then I saw that there was a chance for a carryover. So I watched the nightcap, and Andy warned everybody to say that the short priced favorite was dubious, and sure enough, was off the board.
Yeah, when you lose at 1-20 at Prairie Meadows, even if it's for a different barn, it's very hard to have a lot of confidence in a horse like that. And I noticed the unbelievable difference in the pick six payoffs between the winner and Air on Fire. And Air on Fire, really, what he does most frequently is set tickets on fire and continues to do that. Found a way to get out of the money when it looked like he was going to draw off to win very, very easily. So just one of those where I think Jason Service, who's about as sharp off the claim as anybody in the game, would tell you that sometimes the best laid plans don't pan out. I imagine he felt like that was a horse that he'd probably be able to move forward. And he had certainly shown a lot of talent, right? I mean, he had been competitive at Oaklawn. He'd been competitive at Saratoga. But he is the definition of a refuser. He does not want to win. He has no killer instinct whatsoever. And now has gotten to the point where when he realizes he's going to do his job and not win, he just completely shuts it down. So, and the winner, of course, that was an example, and Andy brought it up, and it's another case where you're going to have horses making surface changes, getting to the dirt, because obviously there's no other surface available in New York, and this was a horse that Mark Cassie had in Canada and had run exclusively on the synthetics, but you needed to just have a very basic understanding of pedigree to know that this is a horse that probably could have easily been on the dirt, just ended up in Cassie's program going to Canada. So it was no great surprise that he excelled getting back to conventional dirt and clearly being in a field that was largely quite a bit lesser when you got outside of him and Air on Fire. He was able to get the job done. And that was a great example of how beating a favorite, especially a short-priced favorite, in this kind of scenario can really just make your exotics very lucrative. Because that, I mean, it was a 10, almost 12 times the payoff in the pick six to the winner as it was to the favorite.
Right, and I think the winner was the only other pay.
There was one other horse who was covered.
Yeah, so yeah, 92,000.
So, right.
Well, the Cassies, maybe that'll keep the Cassie barn in New York a little bit longer. So, because
there's Mark about as much chance of the Cassie barn leaving. There's as much chance of that barn leaving New York as there is Ron Palucci getting out of the game.
There you go. There you go. Cassie complaining about the workman's comp. We talked yesterday to Joe Applebaum. Yeah, I wanted to bring that. I'm glad this came up because Andy was, you know, in fact, there's been a couple of those that Andy has the last few days, going back to last week too. I was watching and he waves the red flag to people about horses like this better than anybody. Let's turn to Florida. You got anything? Did you do much Florida panning for gold?
Not a ton, but I mean, the Fort Lauderdale is a race obviously worth mentioning in any setting. It's an incredible group together. I guess they're going to do what they can to try and get some of these horses to the new Pegasus Turf race. And you've got a lot of Breeders' Cup alums coming from different Breeders' Cup races that are now getting back to what should be a weaker race. But of course, this Grade Two is every bit of a Grade One. You've got one graded stake winner after another lining up, and interesting horses like Curbon, who scored a surprise win in the Bernard Baruch in his North American debut, and then hardly disgraced himself in the Shadwell, running a good third, not necessarily getting the best trip, did cover a little bit of extra ground. Black Type, who's always knocked on the door, seems to have developed this incredible amount of speed in his last two starts, and that's come as a pretty big surprise to most, definitely including me. And that might be what puts him over the top in a race like this. There is not much speed on paper in this race at all. And if Tyler Gaffalione can get him somewhat forwardly placed, that's going to be a big, big advantage. You also have a Zulu Alpha, who was claimed by John Ortiz, and off of that claim won the Sycamore, now moves to Mike Maker, who's generally Mike Huey's go-to trainer. And this is a horse who's been effective at basically every distance from a mile now to a mile and a half, and could end up being a horse that ends up in the aforementioned John Connolly in a few weeks down here. So, yeah, contention runs very, very deep. There's no doubt about it. Shook's two horses probably would have been mid-range prices, and then drew the 13 and 14, and now they look like 20-to-1 shots. So it's just that kind of race. I'm going to be sure to include Divisadero as well, who, given that it was a bit of a home game for him, the Breeders' Cup Mile was a tremendous performance. Looked a little bit around the turn like we might have and analyze it. Divisadero, Exacta, which would have made me very wealthy. But if, unfortunately, that didn't occur. But he still ran. He really, really ran well. And that was another of a series of good performances in 2018 for Kelly Rubley. And this is a horse, obviously, who's run well and ran great for Buff Bradley routinely and has been able to carry that form forward. So the thing about him that might just give him a little bit of an edge on some of the deeper closers is that he really doesn't have to be that far back. And though the Breeders' Cup Mile pace was hardly quick, he was never more than four lengths off of it. And if Heavy on Toledo can get him to a comfortable position about mid-pack, I think that he can be very, very dangerous. And for that matter, if you're talking about a pace conversation, you'd be foolish to exclude Mr. Haverkamp, who ran a good second of the Woodbine Mile, albeit with a cozy trip, tracking a slow pace, came back and won the Autumn, looks to be training very well, is a horse that just got down to Florida in time to work a bullet at Palmetto, so take a look at the workout reports and see what the wording is on that. He's one that I'm definitely going to include at what should be a good price. This is a race where you should be shopping for value because there's way too many contenders that are going to be much bigger prices than they should be.
Well, and the fact that John Velasquez gets aboard Mr. Haverkamp is a positive because Johnny will be forward with him and probably will sit third and see how things unfold in front of him with Black Type and Glorious Empire. And how aggressive do you figure Edgar gets with Glorious Empire?
you wonder, right? I mean, he's obviously quick enough to get the lead at a mile and an eighth, and they sort of have only one game, which is to send and hope that he can dictate terms on the front end. So I would imagine it is really not Edgar's style by any means to send a horse like this, but I think it's pretty much their only option. So you figure he goes, Black Type somewhat forwardly placed, and then Mr. Haverkamp might just fall into that ideal stalking trip that would certainly make him very interesting, and if he's anywhere around 12, 15 to 1, he's great value.
Yeah, I agree, and you know, Johnny taking over for Eureka De Silva, you know, and Dr. Mounty, if Forrest Boyce can, you know, manage to maneuver her way around and not lose too much ground into the first turn, Dr. Mounty, you know, poor Shug, I mean, he must have been, Shug doesn't have a whole lot of hair to pull out, but he couldn't have been too happy to have both horses draw the way they did, both Inspector Lindley and Dr. Mounty outposted. So it is just a entertaining as hell running of the Fort Lauderdale, the FLL. Anything else, Nick?
No, I mean, it's a good slate of stakes at Gulfstream, no doubt about it, and this is their first sort of big day. I did notice that Dream Pauline finally surfaces after being entered a couple of times, well, being entered in the Breeders' Cup and not getting in, but also being entered last week in New York in the Garland of Roses, and now is going to try the Sugar Swirl. And she's a horse I've always kind of liked. I've always thought had a lot of talent and was obviously going to be a big, big long shot in the Breeders' Cup. Fits a lot better here. And she really didn't have much go her way last time. I'm hopeful that there's enough pace in here to set the table for her. It does look like the major players are more of the settle-in-one-run types, given that that's pretty much been the style for Awestruck and Stormy Embrace. We've seen Stormy Embrace show some speed in the past, but if Proper Discretion can battle on the front end a little bit, maybe see Surprise Wedding show some speed, I'm hopeful that Dream Pauline gets a good trip from just off the pace, because I've always felt like she was a horse with some talent and didn't get really much of a chance to show it in the Dream Supreme. So we'll see if maybe this can go a little bit better.
Excellent. Well, Nick, I appreciate it, and it's been a great year. Have a wonderful birthday, a Merry Christmas to you and your family, and we'll talk in about 2.5 weeks, give or take. January, let me look at this, actually, January 4th. And are you're not going out to Santa Anita for the big thing on the 5th?
No, not planning to right now. With two entries and... You know, I'm not much of a 4-point chaser. I'm gonna kind of wrap up for the year.
Nice. And so Pegasus Betting Challenge Day, your next big outing, but you'll be firing away, including probably later today.
No question about it.
Nick, thanks a lot. We'll talk in a few weeks.
Thank you, Steve. Have a great one. Merry Christmas to you and everybody listening. Happy holidays to everyone. It's been a great year. I look forward to talking to you, and thanks again for having me.
Not at all. 2019 for Nick. Another big year ahead, including maybe this is the year that Nick makes his big NHC run. Let's take a break. We've got Mary Rampolini and Steve Anderson, the Daily Racing Form, going to join us back-to-back. And Ed DeRosa, we'll get some opinions from Ed going into the year-end and into the weekend. Plus Mike Welch later, get some clocking report. Maybe he can help us with that good maiden group. And much more. John Marshall as well today from Revolutionary Racing. They are now on track to reopen Colonial Downs. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use ExpressFund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Santa come once, yeah, we all know. Don't use my chimney, got a key to my door. Oh, oh, look what Santa did, messing with me. Call it Merry Christmas, I said Santa's messing with me.
Campbell, Santa's messing with the kid. Love it. The R&B Christmas stuff is the best. That's our favorite. Mary Rampolini is our favorite from the Southeast to the Southwest and many other points in between. And Mary's gearing up for the Oaklawn season, which is not far away. We're hearing more horsemen all the time talking about, you know, sending their horses, getting set up at Oaklawn, including Nick Zito making Oaklawn a winter haven for Nick. Very cool. And we're looking forward to Oaklawn conversations come January. Meanwhile, down at Remington, they've got the Springboard Mile card that has really become, you know, with the passing of the Delta jackpot, Mary, the Springboard Mile for $400,000. This has become the big fish.
Yes. Good morning, Steve. Yes, I was just checking a little bit of my facts earlier. I'm doing some writing today on the Springboard Mile, and so this is the second year for it to be a Kentucky Derby points race, and like you said, it kind of fills the void left by the Delta Downs jackpot, which has not been run the last two seasons for different reasons. But So this has been a nice little spot. They got 11 horses going, and they actually got a shipper from Kelly Breen, who was always very active in the Delta Downs jackpot, a horse named Epic Dreamer, coming off a maiden win at Belmont Park. But, yeah, nice field of 11.
Let's dive right in, actually, and we can touch on some of the other things going on, the trapeze and the She's All In. But Steve Asmussen obviously empties the cupboard in this spot, and I felt that Epic Dreamer, you know, before the morning line came out, it looked to me like the Orb Colt was going to be the favorite, and sure enough, 8-5, and then the New York bred Bankett coming out of the Sleepy Hollow win is the second choice. But another four from Asmussen to consider. What do we know about some of the more obscure Asmussen runners?
Well, a lot of Bankett, as you said, coming in off the Sleepy Hollow win at Belmont. The other four are kind of built their credentials during the course of the Remington meet. Steve has a division at Remington, and he is the runaway leader in the trainer standings this season. So horses like, Long Range Toddy, he won the Clever Trevor going 7/8. That's the final local prep for the Springboard Mile, but he led an Asmussen sweep of the top three spots. Cajun Firecracker, who was second, Steve said, is pointing for Fairgrounds, for a sprint race at Fairgrounds, but Tobacco Road, who was third in that Clever Trevor, this final prep for the Springboard, he comes back here as well. So these are horses that have run, over the local strip, had a chance to race here. Tone Broke, he's had a big meet. He's won his last two starts at this mile distance, one of them by 15 lengths, a maiden special weight. So they're horses that have kind of developed over the course of the Remington meet, and just in talking to Steve, he felt they deserved the opportunity to run in this race in their backyard over a track they performed well on.
And it is interesting. I'm kind of mixing and matching the horses of Asmussen, and Steve is actually been running them against each other quite a bit. This is not a question of them all kind of coming together in the stake spot, because Kazaranga, the Calumet homebred, the Candy Ride out of the very nice teammate, faced off against Tone Broke, and then in the Clever Trevor, Long Range Toddy and Tobacco Road, part of that, and virtually all of them that had been down at Remington, they've all kind of run against each other. So they actually have been taking turns beating each other.
Yeah, it gives you a little bit of a line on some of them, and I think once you get that maiden win, you have less opportunities to get maybe an allowance spot to yourself. So you have to kind of mix and match, like you said, find the right spot.
A couple of others we talked earlier, James Scully, interested in Dunf, potentially at a decent number, and
sure.
Coming out of the Kentucky Jockey Club, where he had a big buzz coming in, and there was a real expectation. So whether it was the wet track being a little wide as well, somehow, even though he had drawn inside, he ended up somewhat wide. Whatever it was, the Dunf going to have to try to regroup from that, but you're going to get a better price today than you got that day. And then we should talk about Brad Cox with the Cairo Prince colt, Marquis Prince.
Yeah, going back to two turns, he's been excellent around two turns, and didn't run a bad race last time in the street sense. I mean, when you run into improbable, what are you going to do? But I do think he's going to, the two turns is going to help this horse. Getting back to that, he's 2-for-3 at two turns.
Well, that's true, because he debuted. That's interesting too. He debuted going a mile on the grass at Ellis.
Nice, versatile kind of colt. Like you said, he's got the grass race in him. He's dirt race, so
done a little.
Definitely kind of an interesting horse and a bit of a price too, I think, as well. So
it's a fun bunch. Danny Pish too on the outside. We should mention the Oki bred Ditas, and this is a Cheetos gelding that won at second asking and then won the McNeil when stretched out to a mile. So fits from a fig standpoint, Mary. I mean, Ditas is not completely outclassed here. And Lane Luzzi, we should mention, is really done very well, including the stake win on DTaz. Mike Luzzi's son, and good to see Lane winning races.
Yeah, he's coming to this region now. I think he came for the Remington meet a year ago, so he's actually in his second Remington meet. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, no, he's been a nice fit to this market for sure. So, but yeah, I agree with you, Steve. It's a very competitive race. I mean, Epic Dreamer could be a very nice horse. He is coming off a maiden win, facing winners for the first time. I do like that Castellano's, you know, coming with him. And I just think, like you said, it's not an easy race to sort through. They match up well on paper, a lot of these horses. And it'll be interesting. The winner, of course, will pick up 10 points for the Kentucky Derby. So.
Now, the Springboard Mile and post time on Sunday evening, 7:52 Central. So after you've watched football, you can get some action in at Remington. And of course, it's a stake laden card. Half of the 12 races are stakes, and we've got the Oklahoma Breds sharing the spotlight, including the Jim Thorpe. Let's talk, though, about the She's All In and the Trapeze, the 9th and the 10th. And two nice fields for these co-features.
Yeah, I think it's, again, like we've been talking about, it's pretty competitive racing. The there will be an all-stakes pick four. It starts in the 9th, runs through the 12th, and they will put a minimum guaranteed pool of $100,000 on it. For Sunday at Remington. The She's All In, I thought an interesting horse in here, Steve, was Shenandoah Queen coming in. First start for Gainesway Farm, first start for trainer Brad Cox. She's going back to two turns where her last win came in the Tranquility Lake, you know, going two turns. She just seems interesting. She's new to the market, of course, you know, primarily being based out in Southern California. And she's going to go up against a real strong regional horse in Adore, who's going for her fifth straight win.
Yeah, I'm just also noting Cosmic Burst on the outside coming up. Zia Park Oaks. Don't want to forget her. Shenandoah Queen's a horse that I've really kind of liked the time that she spent with John Sadler. And about to turn seven, and it's kind of interesting that Gainesway clearly, I got to think, I mean, with her resume, I'm a little surprised. Maybe they're just biding time, you know, before she gets bred, because I imagine I'm going to have to look, Mary. She must have gone through the sale, correct?
I am in the process of looking that up. Yes, I do believe she did go through the sale, but I don't know that for sure. I was in the process of doing that. And to answer your question, which is a good inquiry, just in talking to Brad Cox, right now the plan is to run her a little bit until breeding season in February. So they've got a little time to play with her right now. So.
There you go. All right. That makes sense. And, of course, she's a Henny Hughes. And she was always I always kind of liked her, and over the years, she ran well. I mean, she got the black type, the grade one placing in the Zenyatta last year.
You know, yes,
behind Valdori and LaForce. Nice. Well, you've also got the Trapeze, this is the 2-year-old fillies, and this race doesn't have the same cachet or certainly the same purse structure as the Springboard Mile, but it drew a nice group of nine.
Yes, and, you know, again, I think it's just it's a hard race to have a lot of confidence in one individual over the other. They're pretty well matched, but I think Murata, she's gone back-to-back here at Remington at this mile distance. I mean, she looks like a logical kind of horse in here, obviously. Maybe the favorite with the Asmussen-Santana connection. You know, the last time they had a big Stakes Day at Remington, Oklahoma Derby Day, Asmussen and Santana won 5 of the 10 stakes on the card together. So that's, you know, they're here. They're not here for fun. They're here for business, for sure. I think Cowgirls Like Us will get some good support as well. You know, she's the most accomplished horse in the field. She's won a couple of stakes.
Well, Steve's got the 3 in here, and certainly got to mention Clark Brewster. Clark's got Bella Alicita. This is a Bellamy Road filly that won at First Asking. Got her career going with a 1 mile victory where she was 3-2, so she comes back and looks for stakes success immediately. You know that horse on the outside. Randy Morse comes back first off the claim, poached a horse off of Tom Durant, the Texas bred Miss Perfecta, and that $75,000 claim. And Randy Morse has had a terrific meet so far.
Yeah, she's an interesting horse, too. She's a very honest horse. You know, she's got a lot of speed influences in her pedigree. I will be interesting to see, you know, if she'll do this mile effectively and how she'll do as she stretches out. My memory serves that Perfect Meadow was a really good stakes-winning sprinter for Tom Durand. If my memory serves, she was at her best sprinting. So I know we're just going a mile, but I'll be interested to see how this filly develops.
Well, and by Touchtone, who you do not see in pedigrees too often.
Touchtone. What a nice horse. Yeah. Beautiful horse.
I'm remembering Touchtone in the Haskell versus Point Given, right?
Well, I believe
Touchtone
you're right.
Involved in that?
You've got a great memory. I have to tell you.
I'm pretty sure that I'm thinking about Touchstone, and
you're gonna laugh. I remember him schooling in the paddock at Lone Star. So I just remember being struck on how beautiful he was. That's my memory of him.
Well, you know, you mentioned Lone Star, and we would be remiss if we didn't talk about Cover Charge that. Ronnie Cravens is training for the Lone Star Racing Club.
Well, I'm going to tell you, you're going to laugh on this. It's a different group. And the difference is the word park, Steve, just so you know. The Lone Star Park Racing Club is the entity that Lone Star Park administers. And
okay.
Ronnie Cravens' group was actually formed prior to that. So
that's funny.
The difference being the club there, the word park, excuse me, between the two clubs.
Okay.
But we will see the Lone Star Park. Just so you know, the Lone Star Park Racing Club that the track did dispersed of their horses at the end of the Lone Star meet and donated, I think, over $10,000 the jockeys, to the riders,
permanently disabled jockeys fund.
Permanently disabled jockeys club, and they're going to gear up and have more than one group next year. They expect it was so popular. So.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it is. And then, like I said, Mr. Cravens has been running with his group, the Lone Star Racing Club, and the horse looks like she fits in there too. Cover Charge.
Well, and to answer a couple of questions that have come up here with Mary, Shenandoah Queen absolutely changed hands during the sale for $385,000, and Touchtone was second to Point Given in that Haskell. And there's something very funny. There's a picture that will remain in my mind, Mary, forever, and that was coming off the turn when Point Given basically, you know, comes up to Touchtone. And there's a picture at the time, and I don't know if I've got it. I think I've got it. Somewhere I probably have a copy of it, where Touchtone is so much smaller than Point Given that his entire body is obscured. You can see that there's six or seven legs between. There's Point Given's 4, and then there's like another couple of legs somewhere. But Point Given is so big, with Touchstone on his inside that you he's completely obscured. And I'll never forget that.
That was point given for fans
that know him, that know his story. That was his most courageous performance because he basically was running on three hoofs, and Baffert was battling that, you know, he battled that hoof issue really his whole career, but he went in it's like a scene out of Far Lap, three legged lame and with no training and gutted out the Haskell win by half a length over Touchstone, Point given, my stock given fan for sure. Yeah, I am. I am. I look to my left, and the picture from the Travers. I got a great frame print,
right.
He's the horse that I bring up, Mary, when people talk about, this horse is going to win the Triple Crown, and I say, well, listen, if point given didn't win the Triple Crown, no horse, no matter how talented, can be derailed. And of course, that was still a period when we were wondering if there was ever going to be another Triple Crown winner. Now there's
absolutely
been two.
Exciting times for sure. And back on the trail, trying to go for three here, aren't we? We're already starting that process of these babies and be three pretty soon.
Well, the Springboard Mile going to give points to somebody and provide a springboard to the three-year-old season. And, Mary, it should be a very nice day at Remington. And I suppose we should just slip in some Oaklawn news. Things continue to build up toward the start of the season. And we're hearing, some more and more of the horsemen that are headed in that direction. You wrote about Nick Zito this week coming in with a 20-horse string.
Mr. Zito said he's going to test the waters, come in. He said it's something he probably should have done a few years ago. He just really didn't get around to it, to use his words. So he's grateful to get in now, he said, because, it's become such a popular place. He said during Saratoga he ran into so many people that spend some time racing at Oaklawn, just hearing about Oaklawn. So he's going to give it a shot.
Well, and he's got some horses from Toby Keith
That's what he said. Yeah, that some of this division will be some horses from Dreamwalking Farms from Toby Keith. So, Toby Keith's main operation, as far as the farm operations, are in Oklahoma. He's a resident of Oklahoma and active with a number of trainers in this market and in the Oaklawn market. So it would be nice to see what Mr. Zito has in his barn for him.
Well, and of course, Oaklawn, last year on Arkansas Derby week with the news of the expanded schedule, and so that'll be a new wrinkle for this year. So we're looking forward after the first of the year to start to zero in. And also, I brought up with Nick Tamaro, Mary, Sam Houston getting geared up for its run.
Yeah, actually, both Oaklawn and Sam Houston both opening on January 25th. And they are getting ready for their meet, the Houston Ladies Classic, of course, and the Connolly Cup being the centerpiece right off the bat, opening Sunday. So it'll be exciting. Exciting for sure. Houston has a beautiful turf course. And like I said, Oaklawn's purses. And they just continue to build, and this meet will be very interesting because it will extend through Kentucky Derby Day at Oaklawn. So it'll be interesting to see how the racing stretches out across that period of time. Not a different number of days, but just a different structure in the length of the meet.
Well, and what's going to be intriguing is to see when Fairgrounds closes, who goes, who immediately sends their horses, back to Kentucky versus who may either add to their stable or stick around a little bit longer and run it at Oaklawn, and it's going to be interesting to see how this all unfolds.
It will be interesting to see how it splits, and obviously purse structure is so strong at Oaklawn. Those maiden special weight races, guys with young horses are going to have to take a long look at staying. And they've placed some interesting stakes towards the end of the meet as well. And then I can tell you, just talking to a lot of folks locally, when this was announced last year, they said from an on-track standpoint, this is just going to be immensely popular in Arkansas with the college kids that time of year, the weather breaking. It's just really going to be big on track the way the new schedule will be into May like that.
Well, Mary, warm wishes to you, and I appreciate everything all year long. We'll talk to you after the first of the year. Merry Christmas. Happy, healthy new year.
Steve, happy holidays to you and your family, and thank you so much for your kindness this year.
Not at all. Mary Rampolini, folks, who just covers so much, a wide swath of territory from the Southwest to the Southeast, and always enjoy visiting with Mary. We'll take a break here, and when we come back, Steve Anderson is going to join us. Case, I got to give you his, he wants you to call on the landline, so I got to give you that number. Ed DeRosa and John Marshall and Mike Welch. Hammer, I just heard from Hammer. He's with his dad. His dad had a hospital issue earlier this week, and so going to have to delay Hammer's visit. We'll probably get him next week. All right. I apologize. We were looking forward to having a visit. But his dad comes first. We will come back with Steve Anderson, talk a little Los Al second weekend, and we'll get his impression of the 2-year-olds. And actually, Steve can probably give you a little bit of the quarter horse action to consider Saturday and Sunday at Los Al this weekend. This is the big weekend. You got the Futurity and the Champion of Champions as well. So I'll rely on Steve's far-flung interests. You can use Steve on all these fronts. He follows the quarters. He follows international. He was at Cheltenham for the fall session. International, everything. Steve Anderson does it all. He's with us next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There are places where being who you are is a punishable offense. These places have many names, but the ones who flee have one. Refugee. And it is in the name of the refugee that Hyas has dedicated itself for the last 130 years. Created in the name of the Jewish people, 4.5 million rescued and resettled so far. When they said, "Give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free," we were the ones at the docks helping them breathe free. Only now it's a farmer from Darfur, a shop owner from Syria, a family from Ukraine, a child from Colombia, a Christian from Iran, a gay man from Uganda.
The 65 million souls who still wander the earth in search of sanctuary.
Why? Maybe it's because being Jewish means you don't have to be reminded never to forget. Hyas, for the refugee.
Visit HIAS.org to understand the mission and support the work of Hyas.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and catch the summer on Afternoon Delights, absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer had a very shiny nose, and if you ever saw it, you might even say it glows. And all of the other reindeer used to laugh and call him names. They never let poor Rudolph join in any reindeer game. But then one foggy Christmas Eve, Santa he came to say, Rudolph with your nose so bright, won't you guide my sleigh tonight?
Jack Johnson cover. Really good. Rudolph. Happy to welcome in Steve Anderson, who, I come to California and I expect to see you, and I saw you in the paddock a couple of times, and I never got to say two words to you. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Well, that's okay. We were both on the go, and it was the big Grade 1 weekend at Los Al, so it was, you know, it was a very active weekend. It's very good stuff.
Well, it's kind of a perfect, I'd say, you know, kind of a quiet lead-in toward the opening day at Santa Anita, which is edging closer, the 26th, of course. And I thought the two races, in different ways, were both terrific. I mean, Baffert obviously sweeps, as does Drayden Van Dyke, but clearly Improbable is advancing his candidacy in the division, Steve. That was... The more I watch it, the more impressed I am.
And the more impressed I also am with second place Mucho Gusto in his first start of the mile. Baffert has, not surprisingly, when you have 22-year-old maiden winners since July 22nd, depth in his soon-to-be 3-year-old division as we get to the end of the year. You know, and then we look beyond Game Winner, the undefeated winner of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, as the clubhouse leader, so to speak, in the group. And again, now with Improbable and Mucho Gusto, there's even more to look forward to for that stable. So high expectations, high pressure. But then when you have 10 or 15 first-round draft choices at all the different sales over the course of the yearling and two-year-old market, you're supposed to win these kind of races.
Do you have a pecking order in your mind right now? And who's being underappreciated among them? And who is maybe a little overrated among them from your perspective?
Too early to say anybody's necessarily overrated since they only have had, you know, 3 or 4 starts. But I will say that, like I've mentioned, Mucho Gusto, I thought, ran very well from the front to be a game second after Improbable pulled away. And so much can change, of course, in the next, 3 or 4 months in terms of development and maturity and things that go on with 2-year-olds becoming 3-year-olds. That's one that I'm going to look forward to seeing, develop. We have to remind each other, though, that even now, in the middle of December, we still didn't know Justify existed, per se. He was just, of course, just started his workouts last year in California. Of course, he'd been in Keeneland before that. But, so in that regards, you know, this is sort of a conversation that ends with an ellipsis. You know, stay tuned. Let's see what takes place. Also, I want to know if is a possibility we're going to have a wet winter in California, because we've had some storms already, which didn't happen last year. 2 years ago, it was quite wet. You know, they had an uninterrupted training schedule in California largely last winter. And, you know, there's no real rain in the forecast per se in the next 2 weeks leading towards opening day at Santa Anita. But when you get into the new year, you do get into a period of time in Southern California when it can rain. And I just wonder will that have any impact? Guys here are pretty fortunate overall compared to folks in other parts of the country about never having to deal with the storms on a weekly basis. But it's in the back of my mind a little bit as to will that affect anything?
That's an interesting point. And I will mention, I mean, people heard me talk about it, Steve, when I was there Thursday and Friday of last week. Thursday, I think you might have still been in Texas, but that Thursday, I've never seen it rain for so long or for so hard. I was in Monrovia after the show, and the water running in the streets, I was stunned, actually.
I was here, and we got a buck and a half at the beach, and that to get that much where I live is 3 or 4 times a year max. I mean, we had flash flood warnings, so that's not normal. I mean, I live on a coastal plain. It roars right past the beach and goes right up against the mountains where you were, and it sits. Unfortunately, Monrovia is adjacent to Arcadia, which is where Santa Anita is. So So sometimes when storms such as that, it's very fortunate San Anita wasn't running, or they wouldn't have had the program they wanted to have. And Los Al largely is on a coastal plain, so even though they got soaked, they also kind of got away with a little bit of it too. I didn't mean to turn the conversation into a crash course on Southern California meteorology.
That's all right.
But it is a factor at this time of year in our conversations when we go 7 or 8 months a year without any rain at all, and now, you know, it's in the discussion, at least on a minimal basis.
Well, you know, back to the futurity, and, you know, we know what to expect going forward with improbable. Do you get the impression, and I didn't press Baffert on this on Monday, he was impressed himself. He thought at one point in the stretch that maybe Mucho Gusto would stay on, and until improbable kind of straightened himself up, and you know, those hairpin turns at Los Al, you know, can be an experience for a young horse. Do you think that Baffert will persevere with two turns with Mucho Gusto, or will use him as an assassin, staying short?
No, I think he's a two turn candidate, very much so. And actually, the last turn at Los Al is the same as the tracks at Del Mar and Santa Anita. It's the first turn that's so quick, because when they rebuilt the track and they expanded it to a mile, they built that last turn out to be a standard turn, so to speak. It's the long stretch that the difference is. I mean, you turn for home, and five jumps later, you hit the quarter pole. I mean, it's even longer than Fairgrounds or Churchill, where you turn for home, two
yep.
jumps, you're at the quarter pole. So, you know, in that regard, we watched, you know, Drayden Van Dyke go three wide on Improbable, and he gave him a little bit of a smack, and the next thing you know, that horse was in a high gear and running like $1 million. So in that sense, you know, full marks to him. But the way Mucho Gusto stayed on in that race, considering everything, I think he's a two-tune race. You can almost, you know, predict some measure of reliability that Baffert will mix and match his leading two-year-olds in races at Oaklawn Park and Santa Anita, which are the two venues that he tends to favor. He doesn't run as often at Fairgrounds anymore like he did 15 years ago or 10 years ago, and he doesn't go to Gulfstream. You know, maybe the Wood Memorial would work into it if there was, you know, extraordinary depth in the division for him. But you can see these guys kind of, you know, developing into candidates for the Rebel, the San Felipe, the Southwest, the Bob Lewis, the San Vicente, Smarty Jones, you know, leading into the Arc Derby or the Santa Anita Derby. So, you know, if you're in Arkansas, you follow Arkansas racing, or if you're out here in California, you know, those are the runners that I think will be, amongst others in the division and for his stable, will be, you know, expected to be performing in those rich races.
Let's talk about the girls then a little bit, and that was a thrilling finish. And Baffert's the other filly was hanging in, and plucky as can be, mother. But here came the long shot of Doug O'Neill's that Mike Smith. It came out later that Smith really liked coming into the race, and here was chasing yesterday. The sister of American Pharoah. We had Jane Lyon this week, Steve, who was just a tither at the track. I mean, to win the Grade One with this homebred, really special. And she's so different from her brother. She's just a grinded out kind of one pace type. But she projects to a mile and an eighth, and later on beyond. I liked her win.
And it's easy too. You know, her progression through the autumn: 6 furlong stakes win at Santa Anita, 7 furlong stakes win at Del Mar in November, now this mile and a 16th, a very lovely gradual progression in expectation to build up towards the three-year-old season, suggests that there's a lot more to come from her. And, you know, things didn't work out for her at Saratoga on Labor Day weekend, which kind of threw off the campaign a little bit. But perhaps now, you know, we think of them, well, why didn't she run in the Breeders' Cup? Well, maybe it was a good thing that she didn't go in that direction, because now she's going in the right direction, and she's had these three nice stakes wins in succession. And you begin to think, going into 2019, this is a filly that you know, come March or April, will be at the forefront of the conversation for the three-year-old filly division. So it's very easy to say that, and very easy to expect that, considering how well Baffert's runners, or horses that have wound up with Baffert, have done, leaving the Starlet going into their following seasons, Abel Tasman and Dream Tree. So in that regard, you know, Chasing Yesterday certainly is at the forefront of any conversation with the two-year-old filly division, particularly in the West Coast.
Well, this weekend we look forward to a couple of stakes that the Soviet Problem and the King Glorious, but also, Steve, because you keep your finger on the pulse of virtually every kind of racing around the globe, the quarter horse action this weekend too, and I'd love for you to include that in this weekend's preview. There was that fun weekend a couple of years ago where we had the Starlet and the Futurity in the afternoon and the Champion of Champions that night, and that was my first experience and I really enjoyed it. They're on successive weekends this year, and the Futurity as well. Talk about the weekend, night and day at Los Al this weekend.
Well, today is tonight at 10:15 Pacific is the Southern Cal Derby. It's a $160,000 race, and a very nice filly called Miss Mesmerizing is the favorite. Tomorrow night, $600,000, the Champion of Champions. It is the Breeders' Cup Classic, with the exception that. You know, you see horses that have been prepped for this since February, earning berths, an automatic winning your in races, so to speak. And the build-up to this has been top shelf this year. It's a very, very good race. Jessica Cartel is the star three-year-old this year in California. He's won the Golden State and Los Alamitos Derbies. He's owned by Leslie Joyner. Her husband, Wally, used to play baseball.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. And Jessica Cartel won the Los Al Super Derby very convincingly at 400 yards on November 11th. Trainer Mark Skeen, who won the Los Al 2 million a few years ago, really thinks tomorrow night's 440-yard distance will work for him. He's a Dash of Fire, won this race in 2015 and has been second in the last 2 years. And he's coming into the race off of a second in a trial race a few weeks back, and he's drawn pretty well, should perform well. And the old 6-year-old B.H. Lisa's boy won the AQHA Challenge Championship November 17th at Los Al at 440, and he's going very promisingly. He'll be ridden by Cesar de Alba, an interesting situation with him. He's one of the leading quarter horse jockeys, kind of a big race rider. This is his last weekend. He's going to start training thoroughbreds in Southern California in 2019. He'll have some quarter horses too, but he is switching careers in a few weeks' time. And he's got B.H. Lisa's boy in the big race on Saturday night. Really quickly, Sunday night, $1.8 million Futurity, the Los Alamitos $2 million Futurity. Flash and Roll is probably going to clinch the 2-year-old filly championship if she can do anything. They paid $200,000 for her last year in Ruidoso, which was one of the top 10 prizes at that sale. And this filly won the Golden State Million on November 4th, the weekend of the Breeders' Cup, and then came back to win her time trial for this race November 25th. And speaking of older jockeys such as Mike Smith, Flash and Roll will be ridden by G.R. Carter Jr., who's
G.R.
kind of a boutique rider now, semi-retired. He picks his spots, and much like Smith does. And Carter has been the regular rider of Flash and Roll all year long. She actually started her season up in Ruidoso, and they came down here after. It's an interesting deal. She wins the division of the All-American Futurity Trials in August very well, but she didn't run one of the 5 fastest times of the day, so she did not qualify for the big final. So instead, they brought her to California, where she's unbeaten in 3 starts and going for a fourth win at Los Al on Sunday night.
Has GR over the years, has he regularly visited Los Al?
He used to live out here in the early 90s and rode out here regularly. And then he's an Oklahoma native, and he's kind of ridden largely between Oklahoma, New Mexico, and Los Al in recent years, with a few stops along the way in other places. But primarily, in the last few years, he's ridden the big races Remington Park in March and April and May. Goes up to Ruidoso, rides the big races in the summer, and then he's here in the fall in Southern California, but also a little bit maybe at Lone Star Park for their big races too, or Zia Park for their big races as the season progresses. So he's kind of just sort of ridden where he wants to.
We had him, Steve, on Jeremy Plonk and I had him on Night School couple of years ago when he was angling toward retiring, and yep, it looked like he was going to retire, and I was wide-eyed, and I mean, because I just knew his name and knew his reputation. It's like the shoemaker of quarter horses.
Yep. And the retirement lasted 8 months. He has an oil field business with a high school buddy of his in in Oklahoma, and he worked on that for a while, and he kind of missed the racing. And he's talked about retiring again now, but I think he enjoys just riding big races. He does have some knees that are a little tender after 35 years of riding. So in that sense, you know, he has to be careful physically. His career goes all the way back to Blue Ribbon Downs in the 1980s in eastern Oklahoma. So it's decades long. It's been a remarkable path that he's taken in his career, and he's done well. And I think he knows he's towards the end of his riding, but at the same token, he enjoys his riding. As we saw so well on November 4th, you know, he still has the ability to ride at the peak. And I think he's thinking about maybe not riding much in 2019, but I wouldn't put my $2 on it. I expect to see him again.
if it's not the filly, can Doc Allred win? He's got a pair in here. That Deceiver looks okay.
Yes, he did. He was second to a Political Pence, who's very sharp right now for Monte Arosa. That was a trial race winner. Monte Arosa is a Political Pence in a quick 19.7 seconds. Fastest qualifier was Ali Babe Foose, who was fifth in the Golden State Million with no real excuse, but came back to win a trial race by 3 lengths on November 25th. However, some of the runners in that field had trouble. But the actual performance by Ali Babe Foose to make the fastest qualifying time suggests that colt, who is really well-bred, by the way, out of an accomplished mare, can also be a factor in this final. The long shot to watch is from the same stable as Ali Babe Foose. Jaime Gomez starts Dexter, who drew the rail, and that is going to be ridden by D'Alba for the first time. Speaking to Cesar D'Alba a few days ago about his retirement, we talked about the weekend a little bit, and he mentioned that Dexter has had some good gallops in recent mornings since the trial race. You know, with the quarter horses, they don't go to the track every day. It's not like thoroughbreds where, you know, 5 days after they run, they're back on the track doing something. With the quarter horses, they may only go to the track 2 or 3 times a week, and one might be just for a jog and then a mile gallop. You know, you want to stay so sharp that you don't want to take any of that speed out of them, so you don't do a whole lot of stamina-oriented work that we see so commonplace in the day-to-day training of a thoroughbred horse. So in that regards, you know, when they do go to the track, you kind of do want to get an opinion from a trainer or a jockey, who oftentimes the jockey will exercise those horses on a regular basis, and say, is there energy there? What's your reaction to the performance in relation to the next race, and that, things like that. So it's a little different. That code has a little bit different style of training than what we know about in thoroughbred racing nationwide.
Well, it is a dynamite weekend again at Los Al. The quarter horses really take the bow, obviously, this weekend with the Champion of Champions, $600,000, the feature on Saturday night, and then Sunday, the $1.8 million futurity. Unbelievable. And as you mentioned tonight, the Derby. And I know they're giving away their calendars this weekend, Los Al calendars. And how about the thoroughbreds? Soviet Problem and the King Glorious.
Looking forward to watching Galilean on Sunday in the King Glorious. He was bought for $600,000, an Uncle Mo Calbred trained by Jerry Hollendorfer for West Point Thoroughbreds. He won his debut here in September in the Barrett's Juvenile, a hard-fought win by a neck. Came back to be second to Cruel Intention at Santa Anita in a Calbreds race on November 3rd. And Cruel Intention, trained by Baffert, is out of training right now. Baffert said he's going to give him a break till the new year. So Galilean will be a big favorite in the 1 mile King Glorious. It's his first try at the distance, but Hollendorfer is confident yesterday that the colt can handle that. He's by Uncle Moab and El Prado mare. There's certainly the bloodlines there to suggest, you know, mile and a quarter is not good. In fact, I kept asking him, I said, how much longer until you try this guy in an open company race? And I think that judging from what he's seen in the first two starts and a pretty strong race against Cruel Intention last time, 89 buyer speed figure, for example, that may be something that's going to be discussed as 2019 arrives, because he certainly looks like he fits in that kind of competition.
Well, nice weekend, and then the attention after a nice break. Actually, it's refreshing, Steve, that there'll be a chance for all the horsemen and everybody to enjoy the holiday and. The horses get refreshed, and of course the turf horses all getting time off right now too, before Santa Anita opens. Some early advance on the 26th, as you know, basically these this next weekend, we should have a lot more workers getting ready for their assignments, the Malibu, the La Brea, and more.
Yeah, and there's five stakes that day. Adding to that is the San Antonio, the grade two going a mile and an eighth, a prep to the Pegasus at Gulfstream Park. There's also the Mathis Brothers Mile, which is a grade two going a mile for three-year-olds on turf. And there's a 75 grander for three-year-old fillies. So they're aiming for, they announced this morning, a 10-race program, which will start at 11:30 a.m. on December 26th, and a little less than 2 weeks from now. So, like you said, you know, this weekend and then next weekend, we'll see a lot of the major workouts for the prep races. Looks like a big field for the Malibu. Copper Bullet, trained by Steve Asmussen, who won at Saratoga in 2017 and won an allowance race last month, is part of the what should be a large field. Should be kind of a good opening day program. The resumption of turf racing in California for the first time since December 2nd, since Los Al only has dirt races. So that's a situation where if the weather is cooperative, wouldn't be surprised if there's four turf races on opening day, since there'll be demand for that division. They've had a little built-in break of their own, even longer than the 10-day gap between Sunday's close at Los Al and then December 26th. It's interesting, we talk about that. Typically, there's like a 6 or 7 day gap, you know, between just to let the holiday go through. I recall in 1994, there was no break. Hollywood Park ran on Christmas Eve, and then Christmas Day, and then bam, right back to the horse races on December 26th. So it's a lot different than 24 years ago, that's for sure.
Wow, that's funny. I wasn't as clued in to California racing then. I was much more, you know, Eastern centric, and really with the show I started to really pay attention and really enjoy not just following but betting California and getting geared up here as we start to look forward to the winter season. And it was great to be at Los Al last weekend. Steve, warm wishes to you, and didn't get a chance to talk about your Cheltenham trip, but I did guess when Jay Privman said to me at the time, he said, I got to cover Del Mar this weekend, Steve's on vacation. I said, I bet he's at Cheltenham. And it wasn't 3 hours later that I saw a tweet from you from Cheltenham.
Well, I want to thank you for having me on your program at this point of the morning when you did, because had you called 4 minutes earlier, I would have been slightly distracted by the finish of a 3-mile handicap hurdle, because Cheltenham has racing today and tomorrow, and it's very odd to watch it on television and not be there, and watch it on the computer, actually, via DRF bets, and not be there, and you're thinking, am I missing something? So there'll be a point of the day today when I'm going to sneak away from that and look at some replays just to get some clues for November, which is a short 11 weeks away. For March,
I love
it. Big March races, 4 days, 250,000 people. So that'll be fun.
You going back? You'll go back again, right?
Yeah,
you never miss it, it seems.
Yeah, it's really kind of fun. You have the Sandy to handicap on Saturday, jump a plane on Sunday, and then racing is Tuesday through Friday. So it's really kind of an opportunity to just see two remarkable programs in 72 hours when you have, you know, 30,000 people at Santa Anita and some, you know, very good handicap programs, San Felipe Stakes and very good racing, and then 3 days later you're with 50,000 people watching a two mile hurdle that, you know, has arguably some of the best horses in the world in it. So it's a different world of racing, but it's very, very easy to admire.
Well, two Americans that are there almost every year, Sean Clancy and Steve Anderson. So
we always bump into each other on the same staircase too.
That's funny. That's great. I love it.
They always say, "How's your week going?" Not bad. Oh, terrible. Or, you know, one of us always is doing well. Him is doing well, and me who's suffering. But no, we always bump into each other every year. It always seems to be in the same spot at the track.
That is hysterical. I'm going to ask him about that. It's funny. Steve, I appreciate it. I'm glad we got a chance to catch up before the calendar turned. And happy, healthy, and Merry Christmas, and we'll talk in the new year.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Steve Anderson, everybody. DRF Anderson. And, of course, Steve with just a tireless tromping of backstretches in Southern California. Let's take a break. Ed DeRosa is going to swing by. We'll get some pushes from Ed. Then John Marshall joins us. Colonial Downs, back on your calendar. And back on the docket. They're going to run in August. We'll talk to John and Mike Welch in this third hour at the races, back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get five full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for five of today's top tracks. Visit drf.com/multi-track today.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Your barn is successful. Your program is tried and true. However, there are a few horses that aren't responding in the way you'd like. Does this sound familiar? Well, let Biomedical Research Labs help change that. Our clinically proven products will help your equine athletes become their very best. I guarantee it. This is Joseph Vellante. To learn more, contact me at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.